Hi, this is Smriti Kirvanandan, your host for Health Forward Podcast. One of the most important things you can do for yourself is to take care of your health. Your road to discovering an all-inclusive, empathetic, and innovative healthcare ecosystem starts right now. One of my favorite quotes is, "Resistance is more painful than change." One such change we embraced overnight was the boom of telehealth. We were woken up to the silent existence of virtual care due to the pandemic. The usage of telehealth has gone up 38 times more, and we are now slowly moving towards bringing care to our homes. In my episode today, I speak with Dia Raman, Chief Medical Officer at Teladoc Health, about her journey into the world of virtual care, and we slowly start unraveling our discoveries about the simplicity of humanity. Vidya, welcome to Health Forward. Such a pleasure to have you here.
What a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Vidya, in your journey, you've been a physician, you've led innovation, and now you're the Chief Medical Officer at Teladoc. Share with the audience a little bit more about your journey.
Yeah, it's been a fascinating one. I guess what I'm excited about most right now at this moment is that I am back as close as possible to patient and patient care, right? And probably even looking at things more from, you could say I was one of the more competitive medical students that was ever there. Once I graduated, the reality of the world needing not one, thousands and thousands of great doctors just dawned on me. And then I think also over time, working with patients and especially in teaching hospitals, you very quickly realize that two things. One is a lot of illness and such that we were dealing with is highly preventable, right? And so in other words, people come to us with a problem and then you as a doctor are sitting there wondering, well, oh gosh, that was so preventable, if only, right? Mm-hmm. And then the second part is I caught myself doing a lot of communication. So yes, you have to be a doctor and know things clinically, but a very big part of the being a doctor is the art, right? Which is your ability to communicate, convince, extract information, persuade, and so on and so forth. So both of those, I guess, over time, I mean, I speak of it more simplistically and kind of in a linear manner, but I think over time, what that did to me was essentially asked, you know, had me wonder if I could do something to actually help either of those situations and perhaps help hundreds and thousands of people at a time. I didn't know what that would be and how I would do that, but I realized that med school alone, that degree was not going to do it. So I decided to go back to school. Graduated this time with a management degree, and then still had to go through the process of discovering how to put things together so that I can find a way to add more meaning and help more people. So the way I would characterize my career over the last 20 to 24 years, all in the healthcare innovation space, I didn't plan it to be that way. I would say that I raised my hand when opportunities showed up. So back, you know, early 2000s, when there was an opportunity to define what clinical innovation would and could mean for us as a healthcare ecosystem and for the organization I was part of, I raised my hand and put something together. And so, you know, that was a starting point. And then having navigated through organizations like the Blue Cross Blue Shield, Johnson & Johnson, United Healthcare, Amazon, to name a few, the fundamental notion of innovation has remained the same to me, which is it's about problem solving differently. It's about still finding solutions, but hey, perhaps today we have more things we can consider in the solution than we did 10 years ago or 20 years ago. So innovation I define as just doing things differently. And I enjoy it, but I'm also deeply humbled by how much we still have to solve in healthcare. So my journey, I would say, has been that it's now, I would say it's a journey that's very closely aligned with my own personal sense of purpose, which is about making a very, very small dent, if I could, in health, in human health. Sitting here today, I couldn't tell you how and if I would even do that. But I believe in the life-saving and life-changing power of data and insights from data. So how we put it to use at a patient level for prevention purposes, ideally, but also at a population level for cure, you know, to find new cures and treatments, all of that I remain incredibly optimistic about. So that's a little bit about my journey in the past and what I'm hoping to do in the future. So I would say I sit at the juxtaposition, or I've sat at the juxtaposition of clinical science, technology, including data and insights, and then the healthcare ecosystem as a whole. Because that's the part that I'm a big believer in is that it's almost impossible for one entity within the healthcare ecosystem to solve all the problems, and we have to come together.
I really like your answer, and you've covered so many points in just that snapshot of your journey. One is that you've sat on the other side of the table to be able to serve on this side of the table much better, but at a larger scale. And also touched on points about leadership and what it really takes and the art of connecting dots and sometimes going non-linear and saying yes to opportunities. I think it's very important, especially for women leaders who are trying to climb up the ladder. It's not about trying to find that perfection, but it's really following your sense of calling intuitively, but also believing that every touch point is an experience to unfold your own talent and realize that there's much more coming. As you just mentioned, there's healthcare has many problems, as we all know, and it seems like we'll have jobs infinitely. Hopefully not. We'll move to Wellcare pretty soon. But a great answer, Vidya. Thank you.
No, beautifully said. But I love the way you captured it, right? And especially how you said it. So, but that, you know, aligning with that inner calling, I talked to a lot of children, teenagers, you know, kids in college, and then, you know, people just starting their career, mid-career. And I tell them that it's not like it's magic, and don't expect it to just show up. And it's okay if you still don't know it. It's a journey. You have to go through the journey. And even for my own self, I had to go through the journey, right? In the beginning, I needed a job. I needed a job that would give me the visa to stay in this country, that would help me pay my bills. And then after I started to learn quite a bit and then become good at a thing or two, then I started to think of a career, right? I got the permission to start thinking about a career. And I will say it was more about, okay, is there a different role that I can do this at scale with? So you start thinking from a career standpoint. And after that, I would say is when I really thought through, okay, you know, went into that introspection mode and said, I'm here on this earth for a reason. And what is it that would make me tick and make me get up in the morning? And what would give me the greatest sense of gratification, right? I'm grateful every single day for so many things. And I genuinely want to be grateful for a huge opportunity to make a difference in human health. And so it was a journey that I had to go through, which then allowed me to, you know, align not just the roles that I take, but what I do in a certain role with that. And so it's a daily reminder. It's not, you know, something that I think of only when I'm, you know, going from one role to another, but on a daily basis, just asking myself, okay, is what I'm doing right now helping that sense of purpose and getting me closer to what I want to do? And if the answer is a no, then I start to think and see how to fix it. But no, you put it beautifully.
That's a great way of flowcharting in your own head on, you know, where to go and when to quickly pivot and punt. So Vidya, what is your focus now as Chief Medical Officer in Teladoc?
So I have been with Teladoc now for a good 15 months. So my primary area of focus, there are actually several, but let's start with what we call the enterprise clinical strategy. I use the word enterprise because, as you know, Teladoc Health is the coming together of several mergers and acquisitions, each of which brought a different capability, a solution, if you will, under our belt. So the enterprise clinical strategy essentially says, well, you know, a patient or a consumer at the other end should never have to worry about, okay, what are the six things that these guys have and which of the six do I need? That's our job to do. So the enterprise clinical strategy basically is about aligning those assets to create that greater value and then identifying how to deliver that value one patient at a time or at a population level, right? So if you want to think of primary care, right, we could, like, and as you know, we are in primary care. We could do primary care the same way it's been done before, or we could say, okay, there are probably some unmet needs even within primary care that perhaps we can look to solve a little bit differently. Could we also, for these care patients who come through primary care, provide additional support to manage their chronic conditions? Could we, you know, help them manage their mental well-being? And if they have any mental health challenges, you know, help address that. So an enterprise view essentially allows us to bring together the assets in a meaningful way. So I do it clinically from a care model and clinical pathways from a data standpoint. And then there obviously is the technology integration, as you know, that has to happen, the product integration. So, but my job is to think about how to deliver that larger clinical value and really unlock what a given patient needs, as opposed to looking at it from, you know, product by product. So in that realm, by the way, under clinical strategy, you know, for instance, the other space that I look at is all of cardiometabolic health. And as you know, this is a great example of a problem that we continue to have in healthcare, despite the best efforts, best thinking, best science out there. Incidence of obesity, chronic conditions continues to go up. And that in turn puts people and populations at risk for other ailments. And so cardiometabolic health, how do you think about it differently? How do you create a solution that is meaningful that can be tailored at a person level? So that too kind of falls, another example of something that falls under enterprise clinical strategy. Second, health equity. So I have responsibility. I oversee the health equity function. One of the first things that I did after I got here was hired a chief health equity officer. And with her, like basically we've developed the health equity strategy that's not just for Teladoc. That's what Teladoc should be doing. But as you know, to address health equity, it takes a village. It is going to take all of us together to make a small difference. And so when we think of our strategy, there are also components in there, which is about how do we bring everybody else along? How do we take something else that somebody may be doing really well and fold it in? So I have health equity. I also oversee the clinical quality and patient safety functions, something that I say it's job zero. This is language I learned from Amazon. Basically, it's like table stakes, right? So there is no, it's not care if it's not high quality and if it's not safe. And so we have a robust infrastructure around that. I oversee the clinical research function. So I do, these are like the main areas of focus, but Teladoc Health is a very matrixed organization. So to the extent that, you know, there are clinical implications to pretty much anything and everything we do, I'm part and parcel of those conversations.
A lot of critical cards you've been juggling, and you must be very busy. So thank you so much for being time to be here. I was like, that's basically 5 to 6 full-time jobs in one job.
Yeah, but I know the good news is I have great people leading each of those functions. So my job is just, hey, you know, I'm there if there's any obstacle or if you need a, you know, thought partner. But it's the partnership. I have a fantastic team, thankfully.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, but, you know, I think it's a two-way street, right? You need the leaders, you need the people who cheer you up to actually do what you're doing at scale. So it's critical that you're also there. And I have to be honest, I did not know, though I've been in healthcare and life science for a very long time, that telehealth was an option until the pandemic happened. Mm. It was almost like this invention that just happened overnight. What was your experience during the pandemic and what happened? I'm assuming you were in Teladoc then. What really happened during that time?
Yeah, no, you're so right. Believe it or not, even today I meet a lot of people, you know, general consumers. Classic is like if I'm on a plane with some Teladoc, you know, like a sweatshirt or something, the air hostess, like the stewardess will recognize, oh, do you work for Teladoc? Yes, I do. Oh, I love Teladoc. And of course, my ears perk up. Yeah, tell me more. Uh-huh. And it's like, oh, you know, I travel so much. And once I was here and I had no access to my doctor and I just called Teladoc and they took care of it. So point being, everybody thinks of Teladoc Health as being synonymous more with immediate/urgent care. And you're absolutely right. Prior to the pandemic, I think both from a consumer as well as from the provider physician standpoint, the awareness as well as the acceptance, like how it didn't resonate as potentially being of value, I think prior to the pandemic. But what COVID did was, you know, had us all like under house arrest, for lack of a better term. And so you know, we had to take care of, we had to get creative in how we sought healthcare. And for those of us on the care delivery side, you know, we had to get creative in how we delivered healthcare. So I will say the one great thing that came out of COVID is that aspect of enhancing or really raising the awareness and unraveling the potential of virtual care, digital care, for reasons beyond COVID. So yes, like many other companies in the space during the pandemic, yeah, I was not here at Teladoc at that point, but the company just, I mean, it saw, it gives me goosebumps when I still hear these conversations internally about how literally overnight they had to figure out how to scale everything they did. So basically find the physicians, provide the care, figure out how to do the referrals, how to do the remote, you know, diagnosis of COVID or other things, how to still get people to preventive screenings. I mean, they learned and put everything in place very, very quickly. And that aspect of the DNA continues, right? It's that constant innovation, thinking more on behalf of the patient and so on and so forth. And today where we are is like, certainly compared to pre-pandemic, now the use of virtual care, digital care is definitely higher. And I think its value is just about, you know, kind of unraveling. And so for us at Teladoc, you know, we have taken the approach of, gosh, we see more and more patients that don't just need a primary care physician because they haven't had one ever. But oh, by the way, when we start talking to them, in about a third of them, we discover that they have a new diagnosis of either hypertension or diabetes, which then allows us to get them to the right programs that we have, connect them with the coaches, get them on the treatment they need. So, and then many of these illnesses, they don't exist alone. So there are comorbidities as well as mental, you know, well-being challenges, mental health challenges. So being able to address that. So it's, I think what we have, where we have arrived, I would say, is to this, what the concept that we refer to as whole person care, right? And so no more silos, no more treating body part by body part, but really looking at the body as a whole and saying, how do we provide that holistic care? But I will say, I think as a healthcare ecosystem, and certainly as an organization, we continue to have work to do in terms of continuing to raise the awareness across populations. Because like my recent encounter on an airplane, many people think it's just for urgent care, but the truth is we run the gamut. We can provide care on a longitudinal basis.
That's great. Thanks for sharing with you. I think I'm still fascinated that how did we launch telehealth as a concept overnight, and the human psychology as to how quickly we can do things at scale and also so efficiently when required, right? So I know people say necessity is a mother of invention, but I think it's more than that. And then I constantly think about how do we proactively not take things for granted. It's not just the pandemic, right? It's lives, it's the quality of life, it's how we interact and interconnect with each other. And so how do we stop pressing the red button and just proactively engage with our existence in order to not have these moments of, you know, feeling like it was invention, but it was not. It was existent for maybe 20 plus years. We just paid more attention to it, right?
Yeah, we paid. It forced us to pay more attention to it, right? We had to get creative. And so I know a lot of like doctors, you know, both professional connections as well as my own very, very close friends who wouldn't have ever thought about, you know, speaking to a patient via a computer. But guess what? That was the only option. Because as a doctor, you want to take care of your patients. And so there you were saying, okay, how do I do this despite everything that's like completely shut down? And so, and now that they have done it, right? I speak more, you know, regarding my very, very close friends who are all physicians. And one of them says to me, hey, I can't tell you the number of patients I have who have been with me for the last 20 years, who have multiple chronic conditions. I really don't need them to come into the office. They don't need to. They're very comfortable where they are. I'm okay with that. I'm comfortable where I am. And I love the fact that I can actually, quote unquote, air quote, see them more often because I'm doing it virtually and we're not, you know, waiting for appointments and so on and so forth. So I think doctors too have realized what this does. The other concept I think also that helps us is this notion of a care team, which is what we embrace at Teladoc, right? We don't need a doctor to solve for everything. There are things that the extended care team can do, and that may be comprised of your nurses, a guide, a coach, a social worker, and so on and so forth, because the needs are holistic. And and especially if we want to focus on prevention, we embrace the care team concept and say, okay, who can meet that need the best in that current situation? And then make sure that the patient feels connected to the care team as opposed to just to one person. And so I think that is another thing as well that has emerged definitely since the pandemic, because we had to really sit and think through how to get, you know, what are the best ways to get people to practice at the top of their license. And so, you know, if a conversation is what you need to have, if a questions are what you need to get clarified, who's the right person, as opposed to it's a doctor for everything. So I think it kind of helps the doctors too. So now we have a more of an ecosystem that cares for the patient and not just a single person.
Absolutely. I think dividing and conquering best address one person's, you know, all requirements is critical. So social determinants of health is a crucial factor, as you know, Vidya, and so is digital inequities. How do you believe we are being able to tie these two in terms of teledoc?
In terms of telehealth? Yeah, so great question. I would say that as a virtual care company, we're hyper-focused on health equity and also acutely aware that if done wrong, it can exacerbate inequities, right? So we are taking, it's almost like our patient safety function. The team under patient safety worries about things going wrong. And so it's like constantly looking for indications so that things can be just, first of all, they don't go wrong or we catch it very early. Similar in within health equity, we worry about where we might go wrong and put in place approaches and models that help us get there. So we're hyper-focused. So our health equity strategy, for instance, hinges on four strong pillars: actionable data, access, experience, and outcomes. The data tells us who we are serving. And in an ongoing manner, how are we serving them? What's working? What's not working, right? Without data, I mean, there's nothing. You literally don't know what you're doing. You're in the dark. So we take that very seriously. And we have in place ways to collect this kind of actionable data from multiple sources, including the patients, including their employers. So anything that we can know better about somebody, the social drivers of health, you know, and things, factors such as race, gender, culture, and so on and so forth, it just helps us do our job better. So data is one. When it comes to access, as you know, is not a, it's not a unifaceted thing. It's multifaceted. So it could be a function of geography. Maybe somebody is in a geographically remote area. They could be in an underserved zip code. It could be a function of technology, availability, accessibility, affordability. It could be a function of tech savviness, digital literacy, as we call it. It could be a function of their culture, socioeconomic status, on and on. Or it could be a combination of any of those factors. So again, we don't think of access as a simple one and done thing. So even if we know that somebody is in a fairly good zip code, we still make the effort to understand all of these other dimensions so that we can address those needs. And for instance, our devices, like the ones that Teladoc provides to members in its chronic care program, are cellular connected. So they're not dependent on internet and bandwidth. But I'll also talk to you a little bit about how we are working on solving for that. So that was access. And experience and outcomes, needless to say, no two of us are alike, right? And you have your preferences, your pain points, and you want to be made to feel like a unique individual, not like one amongst thousands. And I feel the same. So how do you deliver that unique, tailored and personalized experience time and time and again? And if we're not doing it, try to figure out why we're not doing it and correct it. So the not part to me is very important. I don't take it for granted that we do everything perfectly. We don't. But we have to learn from what we're not doing and where we can tweak, because oftentimes the solution's like right in front of us. You know, I can give you an interesting example, but not to digress. I have so many stories, patient stories. This is what I mean by coming closer to patients, right? We had this patient, let's call her Mary, and she had shopped until the point that she got to us. She's had type 2 diabetes for decades, has had worked with numerous dietitians and nutritionists, never felt understood. And, you know, still was challenged to kind of manage the condition. She also was dealing with severe anxiety, both because of the chronic condition and things at home. Mm-hmm. I think at her employer, somebody said, hey, you know, you have Teladoc. Why don't you try calling to them? She was hugely skeptical about it, but decided to make the call, gets on a call with our dietitian, and she's still skeptical. Mm-hmm. And she says, okay, so are you also going to tell me that I can't eat my rice and beans? Mm-hmm. And the dietitian goes, who said that? You can eat your rice and beans. And guess what happened? She was sold, right? So right there, she felt like, oh my God, really? You're telling me I can eat my rice and beans? And thus began the journey of building a trusted relationship and really understanding, tailoring the experience. So a big part of Mary's experience was her culture, was acknowledgement of the cultural nuances and attributes that were important to her. So we take the time, put in the effort, gather the data to understand all of these minor things that may seem minor, but oh boy, they are a big deal. I mean, so Mary went on to work with this dietitian, lost a lot of weight, mm-hmm. and her A1C dropped 2.5 to 3 points. Yeah. And she became like a champion thereafter for people and coaxing them to go get their lab work done, talk to the coach, and so on and so forth. So that's like, these are the stories that basically highlight the importance of understanding the bigger context that people come to us with. So that's the third pillar. Fourth is outcomes, right? Again, you can look at outcomes at a population level and say, yep, you're doing well, and so on and so forth. Or you can go further down and say, am I doing well across the various, the diversity and you know, that I have within this population. So being able to look at outcomes data, whether it's by gender, whether it's by age, race, ethnicity, zip code, we take that very seriously. And so those are the four pillars that we've anchored our own health equity strategy on. And the way we go about operationalizing this strategy is through clearly everything that we, you know, productize our products or solutions, even looking at algorithms that drive our products and saying, okay, is there any bias that we need to look in there and fix that? The people that we hire, so not just people like me who are in different roles, but the people who directly serve these patients, do they look like the patients that are being served? And how do we keep that in mind? So the cultural concordance, so paying attention to that. We also rely on partnerships because, like I said, this is almost impossible to do by yourself. So which brings us to, you know, cross-industry partnerships, right? So not everything around health equity needs to be solved within healthcare, in my humble opinion. You can work with a telecom provider. You can work with the government and you can say, okay, in such and such a zip code, how do we make sure we get internet and broadband and, you know, so on and so forth. So you can think of, and I know many people are doing it, many organizations are doing it, but that's how we think of partnerships, both external as well as with our own customers. Like many of our customers are very progressive when it comes to health equity and they want to genuinely solve. So we take into consideration, you know, the assets that they bring to bear, what we can bring to bear, and together try to solve for it. The last but not the least is the policy piece, right? And so working at numerous levels, local, state, and federal levels to influence policies, and also to make sure that Medicaid populations, for instance, are not left behind, and they are kind of looked at similar to commercial populations where it comes to, you know, the standard of care, broadband access, and so on and so forth. So long-winded way of saying health equity to us is a very, very big deal. And it's very closely tied to the clinical outcomes. And so it starts by understanding who we're serving and then how we're doing and constantly iterating so that we do a better job.
Thank you for your very integrated, comprehensive answer, Vidya. And I think, you know, what I keep hearing throughout the last few minutes you've been speaking is healthcare is very simple, and in many ways we have complicated it. So part of me feels like we are now trying to unravel all these layers and trying to simplify not just the way we deliver care, but also how we interact human to human, because it's quite simple, right? The sense of acknowledgement, a sense of belonging, mm-hmm. the sense of just feeling like, you know, nothing is wrong with them, right? So and ingraining that, regardless of whether they're in the healthcare setting or outside, it just becomes a very simple human nature and request for us to remember, not just in the clinical setting, but also in terms of when we create technologies and policies and programs to really make healthcare better. And also the other point I think is we're all humans, and you know, talk about policy and programs is just how do we have different stakeholders at the table? Because healthcare is not just the business of people in healthcare. It literally is everyone's business. Mm-hmm. And that's beautifully explained by you about the cross-industrial partnerships and functions that's required to make healthcare better. Is Teladoc just present in the US? And I know that now that India is picking up in terms of its attention to its economy growth and the population of 1.4 billion people. And my first thought, I know there's a, I think an organization that's doing similar to what telehealth is happening in the US. But I was curious in terms of technology and infrastructure of Teladoc, is there any interest of moving this?
Yeah, no. So first of all, the good news is we're in multiple countries. So we're not just in the US. The bulk of our membership is in the US. And I mean, I would say about 1 in 4 Americans has access to you know, the services that we provide. But we happen to be in multiple countries across the globe. In every country, healthcare is local, right? So we know that both in the US as well as when you start going across the globe. And what that means is while some of these chronic conditions and care needs might be similar because at the end of the day, we're all humans, the way that comes to the surface, rises to the surface. So for instance, you just mentioned India. What primary care is in India is very different from what it is here. You know that, and I know that. And so being able to understand that local context and then really adapting what we do in each country is something that we take. I actually find that so fascinating. I could spend days and days sitting with the international team and going through country by country, like how they have understood the nuances and really created very tailored programs. So for instance, in countries like Canada and the UK, as you know, the government plays a very big role. So you have the NHS and the Canadian government, you know, sponsored healthcare. And so figuring out how to deliver these services through that aspect of the ecosystem is very different from how we do it here in the United States. But it's just at the end of the day, again, what are we doing? We're trying to reach as many people as possible and make them as healthy as possible. So in India too, since you specifically asked about it, we've been there. We've been there for quite some time. I believe where Teladoc began its journey specifically by providing what we call expert medical opinion, right? So somebody needs a second opinion or they've received a very complex diagnosis and it has to be unpacked a bit. So we've been providing this service called expert medical opinion for quite some time. And then during the pandemic, we did a lot of work in caring for patients with COVID. So it's like, you know, thousands and thousands of patients that were taken care of, referred to the best care site, if you will, depending on the need. But we were there front and center, very active during COVID. And then we're also we work with hospitals and health systems in India as well. So for instance, with one hospital where they have multiple locations. And so our technology, you know, we have technology that can connect providers themselves. So not just provider to patient, but provider to provider. So there's technology that basically connects to centers belonging to the same hospital together. So for instance, a patient may have arrived at a different location, but the expert may be sitting in a different location. So how do you connect the two? So that's something that we do. We also work with the hospital to, so this one's in South India, and apparently they see a lot of patients from Calcutta. And so, but Calcutta's, you know, the distance. And so we've actually put in place kiosks in public locations in Calcutta so that patients can connect through that and be seen by these physicians. So therefore, there's the cost of travel, affordability, all of that is kind of taken care of. And then as, you know, deemed appropriate, the next step is like addressed, right? So we've been doing that. Also thinking through other expansion opportunities. For instance, in the US, right, we're working with a lot of hospitals for what we call inpatient connected care. As you know, we have a huge shortage of nurses. So gone are the days when you probably had a 1-to-a-few patient ratio. Now it's about how do you help this nurse augment her skills? How do you scale what he or she is supposed to do or she can do? And so things like virtual nursing, virtual sitting. And so really leveraging technology to still provide fantastic care, in fact, enhance the care even in an inpatient setting is something that we're doing. So very similar conversations happening across the globe. I was recently at our conference that we host every year for our customers, and we had well over 200 customers attend. And one of the topics that was presented was the work that we're doing in Germany with a hospital system, Charité. I may be pronouncing it incorrectly, but it's Charite. Mm-hmm. And how they have partnered with us to leverage this technology to care for patients after they're discharged from intensive care. So I'm not sure if you're aware, but when patients stay in the ICU for a long time and then they go home, they don't just go with whatever condition, right, that they came to the hospital with, but they also go with a high level of anxiety, depression, mm-hmm. and other conditions that have to be addressed. And in reality, what happens is that patient has to come back every so often to be seen by the doctor. That's certainly not every day. But what this hospital system has done is put this technology in place. So where now the doctors are able to see this patient on an ongoing basis, and they have seen dramatic reduction in anxiety, depression, and certainly improved clinical outcomes. And the one other interesting thing is I know we talk a lot about patients, but even for doctors, it's important to know, hey, I saw this patient, I treated him, I took care of him or her for 10 days. Now they've gone home. I wonder how they're doing. Most often acute care physicians don't know what's happened to their patient, let's say 12, 24 months out. So to be able to provide this kind of ongoing continuous care is very meaningful even for the doctor. So I would say, yes, we're in India. And also I would reiterate that, you know, we're in so many different countries and really adapted to the local needs and created those partnerships that can help us do what we do really well.
I really like the fact that you reflected that though there may be a technology platform such as Teladoc, it's really up to humans, the physicians, thinking through the patient experience, the touch points, the before, during, and after of care, and really how to leverage technology. And I know with AI booming, we're all afraid of being replaced and placing jobs and our existence. But I think as long as we are ahead of the curve in terms of our empathy and how we think through for ourselves and for others, I think AI will have a tough time replacing us is what I hope.
100%. I don't think we humans are going anywhere. I mean, if there's one, first of all, I don't often use the word industry and healthcare together, but within healthcare, there's beyond any other industry, like the human part is the most critical part. Technology is a huge enabler. Data is a huge enabler, but it is the humans that basically have to connect. In all these examples too that I mentioned, right? An acute care physician who at the end of the day is a human and he's saying, I would love to know how my patient did 2 years out. I mean, how profound is that, right? And so it's a human, but hey, here's technology that can actually tell you how that patient is doing. So you no longer have to wonder. So yeah, cannot discount that.
So three technology innovations that's really exciting you at this moment. What would that be?
I would say, listen, I'm going to expand your question. I'm going to take the liberty to expand your question to tech and data, right? So I would say anything that can extract deeper, more and greater insights from data. So data, as you know, in healthcare, you have clinical data, claims data, lab, pharmacy, but we're living in an era where there is a lot of consumer generated data with wearables and sensors. So basically on, in, or around the body. Mm-hmm. And so anything that takes all this data and extracts meaningful insights that then drive prevention. So instead of us waiting for something to go wrong, can we identify when or in whom and why things might go wrong and prevent? Mm-hmm. And also if things do go wrong, course correct very quickly, right? So that to me, that is like, I'm most excited about that. I believe in the power of that. I have seen that manifest in small ways, but I think that would be my first one. The second is, since, you know, I've now seen firsthand what virtual care can do and how it closes gaps meaningfully for so many different people, I would say technologies that align with the a company like ours, the ability to provide virtual care, right? So we have what we have, but there are other technologies that if we can all kind of put them together. So, you know, for instance, a better stethoscope, a better, you know, anything, like anything that's clinical, anything that is, it helps us connect more. So technologies that align and, you know, with the virtual care environment, I think those would be fascinating. And last but definitely not the least, this whole space of spatiotemporal biology. And let me explain what that is. It's essentially, you've been at USC and we were just talking about it. So it's putting computation to use on the home in understanding the human body. So, you know, when I was in med school, I can tell you this is not how the understanding that we have today of the human body and its intricacy is very, very different from what we knew of it a couple of decades ago, right? So spatiotemporal biology, for instance, helps us. It's basically leveraging the power of machines and computers to really understand what is going on at a deep, 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 deep microscopic level and take into consideration those new learnings as we think of new ways to prevent and new ways to treat. So I'm extremely jazzed about that because I think it can take us closer to prevention and, you know, and definitely management of conditions, even finding cures for cancers and rare conditions. Because trust me, I mean, it's like the revelations from just some simple pilots here and there are just staggering.
Amazing.
Yes, those would be my few.
Yeah, those are great. I'm equally excited about the quantum computing and digital twin. I'm still questioning the art of metaverse in healthcare, which I sometimes think is a little too futuristic for me. Vidya, this brings us to a last question. Three takeaways for the future of health. What would that be?
Takeaways. Well, remember that any care, whether it's prevention, whether it's managing a condition, has to be first and foremost about the patient. Anything we do, no matter who we are in the healthcare ecosystem, let's put the patient first. Front and center. Let's honor the patient-physician relationship. And so making it personalized, making it more about prevention, anticipating, I think that's something that I think needs to happen and happen every single time. The other thing I would say is there's the doctor and then there's the broader care team. How do we, both from the high tech and high touch aspect, think of augmenting what a care team can do for a patient and populations. I think that would be a great goal to strive for. And last but not the least, a lot of health happens at home or doesn't, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of healthcare will now shift towards the home. It's already happening and it'll only get bigger and broader. So we need to start thinking about how to support that environment. And in my mind, ideally, like, hey, if we can keep people from falling sick for a long time, that'd be a great outcome. But if they do fall sick and need care at home, what are ways to do that really well at home? Because nothing like a home environment when it comes to healing. So yeah, those would be my takeaways.
Wonderful takeaways. Vidya, such a pleasure to have you a part of Health Forward. Thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you, Smriti.
Thank you for listening. This is Health Forward Podcast, and I'm your host, Smriti Kirbanandan.